Hi there, and welcome to the 6th Annual Transforming Toddlerhood Conference. I'm so happy you're here with us today. I'm your host, Devin Kunzman, toddler expert and founder of Transforming Toddlerhood. I'm on a mission to dispel the myth that toddlerhood is terrible and to empower parents and caregivers to overcome the challenges of toddlerhood, nurture their little one's development, and create confidence in their parenting skills. And that's exactly what we're here to do today. And I am so excited to be here with Nicole Cavanaugh, Montessori parent educator and the creator of the Cavanaugh Report. Welcome, Nicole.
Hi, it's so great to be here.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Before we dive in, could you just tell us a little bit more about yourself and what you do?
Sure. So I'm a Montessori parent educator and the mom behind the Cavanaugh Report, which is a website where we share Montessori resources for using Montessori at home. So not necessarily homeschooling, but parenting with Montessori. I have 5 children ranging from 12 down to 11 months old, and we live Montessori. So we eat, breathe, and sleep Montessori here. And so I share that journey, and I have the incredible honor of sharing with the world what that might look like. And I do so on my website and through my podcast, Shelf Help.
That's awesome. And for those who might not be familiar with Montessori, could you just take a moment and explain a little bit more about what that is?
Sure. Montessori parenting is using the principles of Maria Montessori, who was an Italian educator from about 100 years ago, who's created this wonderful educational and lifestyle philosophy of following the child and sort of parenting with the child's own initiatives in mind. So it's more of a child-led approach. And it's through preparation of the adult and preparation of the environment that we let our children sort of develop on their own natural path at their own pace, using sort of the environment as their guide. And so it's a really beautiful and intentional way of parenting, and really sort of meets children where they are developmentally and supports them in their journey of going through childhood.
I love it. I'm a big fan of Montessori, and I'm excited to hear you talk more about our topic today in navigating sibling conflict, especially from a Montessori perspective. And when it comes to toddlerhood, what do you think makes toddlerhood a challenging developmental period, especially when it comes to sibling conflict?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. One is our own expectations as parents, right? We very much have these babies and they're wonderful and they're awesome and give them so much grace because we're like, they're a baby. They're not talking. They struggle to move. And then all of a sudden they're toddlers and they're like saying things to us and they sound really like big and they're moving and they can do all these things. They're really capable. And we forget that their brains are not big adult brains. They don't have, you know, the impulse control. They don't have the attention span. They don't have, you know, this ability to manipulate and rationalize and like all these things that we sort of like to assume toddlers can and should be able and capable of doing, which makes it hard because we sometimes will say like, you should know better than that. But is that really true? Maybe, maybe not. And so when we're assuming those things, we have that sort of expectation gap between what our children can and are doing and what they're actually capable of doing. So I think that makes it really hard. And then to that language piece of it, yes, they can communicate sometimes with us, but often they do struggle and that emotional capacity just sort of takes over as they're trying to communicate, and especially communicate with another small person with another small brain, right? Like, I think I'm thinking about my toddler right now, who is 3, and my older child, who is 5, and their much more difficult relationship. And that 5-year-old often doesn't understand what the 3-year-old is trying to say, right? And so that makes everyone's emotions so much more heightened because that 3-year-old really desires to be understood. And that 5-year-old really has not a lot of patience for what might not be perfect communication. And so I think that language piece really does get in the way in navigating some things that might be easy at a different age group.
Yeah, that is so true. And I love how you said that, you know, we sometimes have this unrealistic expectation that you should know. And I think that, you know, one thing that's important to keep in mind when it comes to toddlers is that even if they can, even if they do know, and if they're have expressive language and they can repeat it back, it still doesn't mean they're capable of acting on it and stuff. And so, like, even a toddler being able to repeat back something doesn't mean they're actually able to put it into action because they don't have that level of impulse control. And I think when you couple all of that with the strong developmental drive for independence and to become their own individual, there's not a lot of team in toddlerhood.
Yeah, and I think particularly too, like, they can maybe do it when they're calm and regulated, right? Like, there might be times where your child can follow a simple direction or can stop their bodies from doing something when they're, like, with you, they're connected, they're calm. Put them in a situation where they're with another child who might be aggravating some of those feelings, moving them into a more agitated brain state where they're a little bit more, you know, dysregulated or a little bit more upset or a little more emotional. And those skills are right out the window. They're not going to be able to access that. And so holding them to the same standard of, you know, when I'm with them and I'm talking to them, they seem to be able to do this. And when they're with a sibling, and they don't have that connection, they don't have that, you know, mirroring regulation, we are at a completely different place. And sometimes as a parent, that's really frustrating. We're like, you should know how to do this. You've done this. I've just watched you do this with me. And we want to hold them to that standard of calm when they're no longer in that place and they can't be in that place. And we just need to navigate and sit with them and meet them where they are. And so much of, you know, Montessori parenting, and especially just like any responsive parenting, is, you know, being with them and meeting them and getting on their level and saying, oh, you don't have those skills in that moment, so I can be those skills for you. And that's a lot of what life becomes when you're navigating difficult sibling relationships.
Mm-hmm. This is a lot of what it looks like to be with a toddler in general. That is for sure. What do you feel are some of the common traps that parents and caregivers accidentally fall into or get stuck in when it comes to challenging sibling relationships?
So I think the biggest thing that I have found is creating a mine, yours relationship with materials, toys, playthings. That is his toy. That is hit her, whatever. When we create this mindset in our homes that these are my things and those are your things, and you use your things and I use my things, and maybe we can share sometimes, but this is mine. I have ownership over it. I think we do fall into this trap of teaching our children to hoard and teaching our children to feel really possessive over some of those things that we have in our homes. And so giving our children a broader sense of control over their entire environment and a broader sense of, like, these are the things available to everyone, has been really helpful. It's just like a little shift, but it is, it's not your thing. It's everybody's thing and you're using it right now. And so when sibling, you know, my siblings are, Ted is my younger one, so I'll use his name, and Gus is my older one. So when Ted comes over and he's using the truck, Gus doesn't immediately run over and say, that's my truck, and rip it out of his hand. It's everyone's material. It's available to everyone. He's using the truck right now, and we'll work through taking turns on our own. But I think that's the biggest thing when we start creating these boundaries and these boxes, there's just opportunities to break those boundaries in those boxes. And that's where the conflict is going to just ramp up and up and up. So I really encourage parents to stop talking about things in a, this is yours, you're letting your brother use it, but this is what I'm bringing to the family, and everybody in our family is going to be able to contribute and use that and, you know, have a turn. We also don't share in Montessori, which that's a big thing to, like, throw out there. So maybe we can talk about that a little more too.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I'm a big proponent of this idea because yes, toddlers are naturally possessive because it's part of them trying to draw the line between me and you and to create their sense of self. And at the same time, whenever we, you know, really perpetuate that, especially around toys, then this is where it can just really, really ramp up. And so I really love the idea of, okay, this is our things. And I've worked a lot on this with families, and it seems to help a lot. One thing that always comes up is, well, what about gifts? What about birthday gifts and Christmas gifts? So I'd love to hear how you handle that with your kiddos in terms of mine and yours and possessiveness.
Sure. Yeah. So they do get things, right? That's labeled. We just did this. Like, this is your present to you. This is your present to you. But we buy it, and we, once it's in our home, it is a toy that's available to all. We never say, like, this is only your toy. We bought it thinking of you, but this is available to everyone who it's available for. Now there's a little bit of a safety piece there. So like my 12-year-old got little tiny Legos. Those aren't appropriate for my 1-year-old. So they are not available because they're not safe. But any toy that's available to anyone because it's safe and they can use it and they know how to use it and they're keeping it safe themselves, they're not being destructive with it, they can use it. So it's not labeled ever again, like, this is, you know, this child's, that's Ted's truck. He got that for Christmas. It's just now a truck that we have. Thank you, Ted, for bringing that into our family. Thank you. We thought about you and we thought we would all enjoy this because you're part of our family. So it's a much more communal sort of feel of when you bring it in. Is it necessarily like something like the merry minute they open it up, if some other child wants to like run in there and take it? No, we have to be rational about like giving people time to use it and enjoy it. And we do like sort of balance that, like, this is something that is special for you in this moment, but we're also going to let it be available to, when he's done, for another sibling to take a turn.
This is great. And when it comes to sibling conflict, what does Montessori method really say or advise around this?
So you're not going to be able to like open a Montessori book and like page 120 is going to tell you exactly how to parent with Montessori and sibling conflicts. It doesn't exist, because that's not how Montessori wrote her materials. But I think the important thing to understand is that Montessori designed her environments, the classroom environment, to one, model a home. So a home has always been, you know, caregivers and children and multi-generational, and it's not sort of a traditional classroom like structure in that all 20 children are the same age. The same is true now in her classrooms. As she developed her method, there's no Montessori classroom that is just 3-year-olds. There's no Montessori classroom that's just 6-year-olds. They're mixed age environments. They're meant to have children who are younger. They're meant to have children who are older. And so the way that we get around this and having, you know, sort of these relationships is preparing the environment and preparing some boundaries with materials. Like, we're going to have materials and you're going to need to know how to use it. I'm going to show you how to use it as an adult, but I'm also going to show like you maybe some lessons on how to ask for that material from somebody else. We're going to show some material, ask how to wait with somebody else. We're going to make explicit sort of games and explicit sort of almost like theater. It's almost like a little puppet show between the two of you. We call them grace and courtesy lessons, to teach children the unsaid rules of interacting with each other. Because so often as adults, we assume that our children have picked this up. We assume that our children know how to say hello. We assume that they know how to knock on a door. We assume they know what to do while waiting. But have we ever sat down and explicitly shared that with our child? And often that's not necessarily what we've done. So let's say like a waiting situation, we might take a toddler, and this is very quick. It's very quick and very fun and like connecting. A toddler who needs to know how to wait for a turn for that toy, and say, I want to show you how to wait. Come with me. Let me show you. You can sit right here. we can sit together while Gus uses this toy. You could keep your hands on your lap or behind your back, or you could wait with another toy. Which would you like to do? And so we're going to just literally that fast. And we're going to do that over and over again. And so that they start understanding those unspoken rules and sort of have that role of cooperation. And the same is going to be true for our older siblings, since this is often a younger toddler and an older sibling. We're going to start giving those same sort of lessons to our older siblings, but also giving them some sort of agency in being the leader. So give your older child a responsibility for that younger child. Can you show your younger brother how to use this material? Because when they feel that connection and they feel that sort of ability to be the leader and take control over that, they're going to be a lot more cooperative and understanding that, oh, this is a child that doesn't necessarily understand or know, but I have a role now. My role is not just to grab or scream or hit, all of which still happen, by the way, very normal. But they have a tool that they can start to practice and say, oh, I can show you where you can find something else to use, or I can, you know, invite you to play with me, or I can get a parent to stop this, or I can use my words to invite you to join me. And when we give them each of those specific tools, there's a lot less conflict and a lot more cooperation between them.
Yeah, this is great, because, you know, what you're talking about here is that we are teaching skills. We're teaching social skills. We're teaching impulse control skills. We're teaching skills, and toddlers don't have a lot of life experience, and they definitely don't have a lot of brain maturation in the area where it comes to regulation, impulse control, and things of this nature. And so I think it's just so important to reframe what we're looking at here, is that this is an opportunity to teach skills so my child can be successful, versus this is a bad thing that needs punished, or this is a problem that has to be fixed. Because actually, everyone's going through a developmentally appropriate learning lesson, as frustrating as it can feel to us adults in that moment, that like, oh my gosh, like, are they really, like, you know, fighting over this truck for the 20th time today?
It's so frustrating, but it's about being proactive instead of reactive. And so how can we proactively give them those tools to have a successful interaction? Not that they always will, but instead of reacting continuously to whatever it is, hitting, fighting, biting, grabbing toys, because all of that's going to happen. But if we're not giving them the ability to make a different choice, we're not giving them, you know, the opportunity to choose or a tool to use to do something different, that same thing is going to happen over and over and over again. And everybody's emotions are going to get really frustrated. And then you get to the point where you're starting to break that connection between you and your child and between your children, in order to, you know, stop doing that. Stop. No. Right. And so no is abstract. It doesn't mean anything. It doesn't help them learn how to make a different, you know, interaction next time.
Yeah. And it's a knee-jerk reaction. And we're humans, and we're going to have these moments where we just have that automatic knee-jerk reaction. And the more that we become aware of those reactions, we can start to shift into a response and practicing a response. And it's not going to look pretty or perfect or anything like that. But it's like a skill that we get to learn, and then we get to then teach a skill to kiddos. And gosh, you know, it takes effort and it takes time, and it is easier just to say no or give out some type of arbitrary consequence or something like this. But in the end, it's kind of, I always like to say, it's like putting a Band-Aid on it, like a cut that actually just needs stitches. And so we like don't want to put a Band-Aid on something. We want to like get to the root, and we want to help shift it so it can go differently. And that's exactly what you're talking about here.
Yeah. And it's about choosing your moment. Like, don't try to make this a lesson when everyone's screaming and biting and hitting each other and you're saying no. Like, that's not your time. You want to choose a time when everyone's calm. We're not in the middle of something else. We are taking a moment this is the activity. You know, you might take out paint and do that as an activity with a toddler, but make a little lesson about how to sit and ask to join someone to play be the activity that you're doing right now. And so treat it like those moments, treat it as something that you're going to do when everyone's calm, when you're looking for a moment to be with your toddler, or your older child. Make it really fun, make it silly, make it authentic to you and your relationship. And I think it goes a long way in helping sort of give them those skills from a Montessori perspective. And that's what we do for all of life, you know, this beyond just sibling relationships, but how to navigate those social graces that we often take for granted in knowing as adults.
Yeah, I mean, I always tell everyone that the transformation happens in the calm moments. That's because that's when the learning happens, because that's when everyone's out of that stress response, out of survival mode, and can actually to put that energy towards being able to learn a new skill. And that's going to take time, and it's going to take a lot of repetition. And if you feel like a broken record, then you're probably on the right track, because it's going to take a lot of interactions, but this is how toddlers learn. I would love to hear more about what you recommend for parents when it gets physical between the two kiddos, you know, when they're just get so frustrated with each other that maybe it even gets a little bit physical.
Yeah. And that's like very normal. I feel like sometimes parents take it as like a very like personal, like I am doing something so wrong. My children are biting each other. I am like, my children are bad children or whatever it is. Like people like very much internalize, like they're hitting or biting. This is like just what they do, right? Like this is very normal, very, even like the best sibling relationships that I've had. And I have like many combinations, they've all hit each other at some point, right? Like it's just a very normal thing to happen. And so I think when you have a sib set that you know is particularly like difficult, it's particularly difficult for those to interact, you're going to have to be more aware of where you are in their play. I always am a big fan of like parents sitting back and like letting children lead that play. But when it comes to having children who are going to take it to that physical place, I think you really need to prioritize safety even more than prioritizing like independent play or concentration or some things like that. It's not in anybody's best interests for children to be like biting and wailing on each other without like an actual adult there. So I always am conscious like, oh, those two are going to play or they're starting to play together. I'm going to prioritize me getting down on their level, being calm, like being that calm, just even your presence and sitting there breathing quietly and being calm. Being down low, being slow with yourself is going to help bring that energy down. But I'm always going to sit somewhere where I can quickly interact. I can quickly grab the person and say, whoops, we're not going to hit. I'm not going to let you hit your brother. I'm not going to let you bite your sister. And I'm going to just gently, you know, move their body back. And my ultimate goal is to stop it from happening the first time. If I have, this is real life, I got 5 children, so I can't always just sit there every time they're playing. So I'm always get my eye on it. So sometimes they do get hit or bit. I'm going to go over and immediately comfort the child that's hurt. We're going to prioritize the one that has been hurt. I'm sorry that happened to you. Are you okay? Do you need anything? Modeling some of the language that I would like to see my child eventually use for when they're, you know, apologizing or feeling remorse for something that they've done. And, you know, really check in with them, make sure they're okay. And then I'm going to turn my attention to the other child. And I'm going to say, it seems like you were really frustrated. Is there something you wanted to, you know, say to your brother? Like maybe it was like, I wanted that truck, but help sort of navigate what they were trying to get to instead of focusing on this, like you hit, that's not, don't do that. Go back a step and try to help them verbalize, I was frustrated that you took that from me, or I was hoping to play with that. Because if we can get back to that root, we can sort of preserve that relationship. And often children are very forgiving. They're going to move right on from being hit or bit. They get their comfort. They are acknowledged. and they usually move on. And so, you know, how can we get back to the root of whatever that issue was? And maybe the other child who got hit did do something, and then turn to that child. Oh, it sounds like you did X, Y, Z. What approach could we take instead? And so sort of helping them navigate that relationship, being that, you know, language translator often between this is what I'm seeing and this is what that might mean, is the approach that I take. And it's not perfect. It doesn't work every time. There are times where it's just like, you're not able to safely play with each other right now, and we're going to find something else to do. And that's okay too. It's okay to just set that boundary. Like, this is not the time that we can play together. And let me help you find something to do, toddler, or come and join me in my work. Because there are times where the emotions just get too heated.
Yeah. And especially, you know, towards the end of the day, if anyone's tired or hungry or just having an off day, sometimes we just have to take a break and try again later. And there's nothing wrong with needing to take a break. And I also want to mention that taking a break is much different than like time out or something like that, that we're just consciously saying, okay, they're not able to handle this right now. We're going to go in a different direction and then maybe revisit this later. And oftentimes kids sometimes just need a break and then they're fine. Or sometimes they need a break until the next day. You never know, but they, you know, they'll be able to come back to it at some point, I feel like.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you're seeing that conflict over and over and over again, especially if it's around like the same toy, like they both want to play with these blocks, that's also a signal to me that maybe we need to change something about our environment or our boundaries about how many children can play with this. Maybe this is something where at this point in our life, only one of you can play with this at a time, right? Like, and then we're just going to always have to make that decision. And so it's not always about being reactive in that moment, but also taking those moments and making it broader. And like, what does this mean? Coming back to it in my own time, in my own way, like, why did that happen? Was there something about the environment that could be better or different, that might change their ability to play more peacefully with one another? And so it's always taking, you know, that that time on your own to observe the situation and to check in with yourself. How did that make me feel? Because I need to be able to stay calm about this. And maybe it is taking a break from that material, that toy. Maybe it is changing something about the way that that's set up. Maybe it is adding more. Maybe we need more magnet tiles. Maybe we're not able to have magnet tiles out until we have enough for everyone to play at one time. And so it's always, you know, think about that environmental piece too. Like, what other factors sort of influenced my children's ability to be successful in that moment?
Awesome. And since we're talking about toys, was there anything else you wanted to add about sharing explicitly?
Oh, yeah. So sharing, I think, is one of those things where we are told as a society that our toddler needs to share. Sharing is caring, right? Like the number of times someone told me that as a child, like, oh, it's not caring. It actually is going to create more conflict. It's going to create, I'm ripping this away from you using it. To give it to someone else. It's sort of an unrealistic expectation for all children. And instead in Montessori, what we encourage is taking a turn and learning to wait. And so instead of putting this time on a pedestal and creating sort of a scarcity, like I have to grip this as hard as I can because I'm only going to be able to use it for a small amount of time because then I need to share it. What we do is create, you can use this for as long as you'd like. And when you are done, it will be your turn. And I'm going to help you wait because waiting is hard. Waiting is a hard skill, but it's a skill we all need to learn. And so it's a hard skill that we all need to learn, but I can sit with you and help you learn that. And then if I'm not feeling so like scarce, this is not going to be taken from me, I often don't feel like I need to keep it forever. You'd be surprised how often even little toddlers are then like, oh, I'm feeling done with this now. Here you go. And so when they don't feel like they have to give something up, they have unlimited amounts of time. They can come back to it and know that they're going to have unlimited amounts of time next time. They're really going to have a lot less conflict. They just are. They're going to be less possessive over their things. It's not going to be as big of a deal if somebody else is using that crayon or that truck or that doll that they were hoping that they could use, because they know they will get their turn and they will have as much time as they need. And so in Montessori, we really focus on not necessarily having, you know, one of everything for everybody, but learning to wait and learning to sit with those feelings of waiting and learning to choose something else that we can do. And those are those same little grace and courtesy lessons. And it just takes time for toddlers, especially, to have that impulse control to say like, oh, I can sit here and wait. But you're going to make it a lot easier on yourself if you're not forcing your child to give up something that they want or are using actively in that moment.
Yeah. And this is really what it looks like to work with your child's development instead of against it. Because, you know, what we want to do is support a toddler in the areas where they can have a sense of control. And so if they're playing with a toy and then we're like yanking it away from them and mm-hmm. forcing them to share, we're just heightening that need for possessiveness. And so it's like, we just want to look at, okay, how do we work with a child's development? I think it's just like a really great example of how to do that.
Mm-hmm. And it is such a shift in our culture, and it's really hard to stand by that, especially when you're out on play dates and things like that. But within siblings, if they know within their home, like, I'm going to be able to use this, and then you're going to be able to use this, it really does sort of take away that need to like hoard it or be really upset when someone else comes near you to play or somebody else wants to join your play, because your play is your own and you're really going to have that time. And it makes a very big difference. And then it doesn't put you in the position of being the referee between, you know, siblings and who had that and who gets to have a turn now. You know, it's who is using this. And when they're done, they can share it with you. They can give you your turn.
Yeah, exactly. In the long run, it's going to be so much better for everyone. That is for sure. Yes. Another thing that I'd love to chat with you about is sibling jealousy, because this is part of like that sibling relationship. So either like moments where like maybe one is like, well, that's not fair, or like maybe, you know, you're like giving some attention or a connection with one child and the other one comes in and they're seeking connection as well. Or even, I know that, you know, you have had a baby in the last year. And so that was also an adjustment with your attention, you know, going towards a baby. So I'm just curious what recommendations you have for these moments where sibling jealousy can kind of creep into the relationship.
I think it's really important to acknowledge that. It's valid. You feel jealous. And I think it's really important for parents, in particular, to say to your toddler, to say to your child, like, you're feeling this, but that feeling isn't necessarily something that we can control, right? So yes, you're feeling jealous, like, or you're really upset that the baby's taking a lot of my time. That's really hard. And just saying those words out loud is really powerful. And I think so many of us want to say like, no, I give you love, like, come here, like, I've done this, like, or start justifying all the reasons why our children shouldn't feel these hard feelings. But really, sometimes they just need that acknowledged. It is hard. Life isn't always, you know, fair. It isn't always equal. It is unfair that your brother gets to play Nintendo, like the Switch, because he's 12 and you're 3. You don't get to play that, and that's frustrating you. And just saying it aloud and acknowledging it, I think, really goes a very long way in sort of giving them, you know, that space that I still see you. I still find your needs important. I still want to validate your emotion, but not all emotion is positive, and that's okay. We have to learn to sit with sometimes those hard feelings. We have to learn to sit with boredom. We have to learn to sit with jealousy. We have to learn to sit with anger. And then I'm going to make a mental note. I'm going to make a mental note that says, I need to give that child some time. Maybe I do need to do a one-on-one extra book reading with that child. It's not always going to happen that moment, but following up at some point if I can, with those small moments of connection, with, you know, maybe I give them a bath instead of their dad, or I read them a story alone that night, making those moments for one-on-one connection. I also find it particularly good to pull in small groups of children. If you have two siblings that are really struggling to get along, sometimes it is really good to just say, like, the three of us are going to read a book. You pick one and you pick one, and we're going to read those two books together, instead of always being like, now is your time and now is my time. We're going to work together and create those strong bonds together, because that is our, you know, family unit. And this is what we're ultimately wanting to create. Not you have a relationship with me and I have a relationship with him. We all have our relationships together, and I'm going to be present in that moment, helping you to create, you know, those positive experiences together, even when there's hard feelings that might not be exactly the way that you want it to be.
Yeah, absolutely. And that requires us to be able to sit with those challenging feelings. So it's like somehow we have to get okay with those feelings and emotions and be able to sit with them before we can even help a child sit with them. And it's part of our inner work and inner growth as parents and caregivers.
It absolutely is. And so much of our children, you know, this comes from such a deep love, but so much of their childhood is not necessarily, you know, happy, excited. You know, the full range of human emotion is a really beautiful thing, even if that is some of those challenging or more difficult parts of the world. And learning to be okay with that, and learning to know that being bored or being frustrated or being jealous is sometimes something that happens and it's okay, has been really hard for me as a parent, really hard for me as a person. But it is so important. We're giving our children those tools for like a much broader and richer life. They're not always seeking that, you know, positive, happy, only can be, you know, good emotion. We're being able to deal and handle all of these different things, and no, we're still going to be okay. My mom still loves me even when I feel jealous. She still sees me when she has to take care of the baby. And that's really hard. And it's hard for a toddler to understand, but just know that's the really hard and important work of parenthood.
Do you feel like this is one of your top tips in terms of navigating and the sibling conflict and helping siblings navigate that relationship, is for you to like really step in that coaching role and validate the feelings and emotions, narrate what's going on to create the space for them to move forward? I'd love to just hear like do you feel like that's one of your top tips and what those top tips are?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of my top tips is you can't be in their relationship. Their relationship is their relationship, right? So we can guide them and we can provide like the calm and the structure between the two. But at the end of the day, they're going to have a different relationship outside of you. And it might not be the same right now as you envisioned. And that doesn't mean it's forever. Sometimes there's this feeling, especially when we have like young babies and toddlers, that like, this is it. We have to do it now because this is who they are. And it's just like not true at all. Our children are having a difficult moment today. They're having a difficult moment this year. They've had a difficult 3 years maybe, but we're looking big picture their whole life. And so what they're doing now is just what they're doing now. It's not necessarily extrapolated to like, this is how they're going to be as adults. So take your own emotions out of it. Let them have their relationship, but keep it where you are providing that calm. And yes, my role and my biggest tip is be there, but be there in a sort of calm, be there as the sportscaster, be there as the narrator of the situation. I see that Gus is getting upset. I see that Ted would like to play with the truck. They're not going to always see those neutral things because they have a lot of emotion wrapped up into it. And so be that calm, be that presence, but then know when to step back, know when to let them have a little bit of a squabble in creating that relationship, because at the end of the day, they have to have that relationship without you. You can't be the person who's continuously micromanaging in order to keep everybody from having any conflict. Sibling conflict is going to happen no matter what. So where is the line of stepping in and stepping out? And I think there's no really, I can't say like, this is that tip and this is this tip, because it doesn't exist. You have to watch your children and know when to be that calming presence and know when to step back and let them have a little bit of control. And so finding that balance, I think, is absolutely the most important thing you can do, especially in those toddler years, so that you're starting to give them agency, you're giving them control, you're letting them make connections on their own, without it turning into like, you know, a wrestling match. And so where is that line? And finding that line might be a day-to-day basis thing, and it's not going to be forever.
Yeah. Thanks for saying it. It's not going to be forever, and sibling conflict happens. So it's not bad or wrong. It's actually expected to happen. And it's actually just part of them growing their relationship and growing their skills. And I think, like, gosh, what a relief, right? To like not have to treat as something bad or wrong, or that we have to make go away, or like, you know, take it personally, like we failed because they can't get along right now.
Yeah. And actually, like, what a great practice opportunity you're giving your kids, right? Like, right. We all have conflict in our life. We all have to learn to navigate that. And we're giving our children this person that's always there to practice with. And so, you know, it's hard for us as parents to see that. And we don't like it when people get hurt. But, you know, it is one of those things where they're learning those skills, and those skills are going to be taken with them to the playground. They're going to be taken into the classroom. They're going to be taken into the workplace. And so you just like, oh, well, I'm giving you skills for life by having a brother who you don't get along with now.
Exactly. Oh my goodness. Well, for parents who are like, all right, we've been having a lot of sibling conflict, and we're ready to move forward and really recalibrate how we're responding, what would you say is one action step that parents and caregivers can implement today whenever they finish this video?
I say, go give your toddler a little lesson. Go say, this is how we can ask to join to play. Because often I find that that's something that's particularly difficult for my boys, is one wants to play with them. They're not even wanting to play with the toy. They want to play together or near the other one. And that causes conflict. So how can I say, here's how we can ask to join? Let's give them that word to just say, here's what you can do if you want to play. Let's practice. And you pretend to be the child, and they can pretend to be the child. And this is going to look real different if you have a 1.5-year-old or a 3.5-year-old. So meet them where they are. But if you want to play with that, you could say, can I play too? Let's practice. And can I play too? And then you can say yes or no. And then give them those ability to say yes. And what happens if they say no? How can I wait? And so give that one little lesson. It can take you 2 minutes, not even, if you have a really young toddler. And so go give them some language and go give them some practice in doing that. And see, it will get there.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, our time is coming to a close, and I know that you have a gift to offer everyone who's watching. Could you tell us more about that?
Yeah, sure. I'm just going to give you guys a little PDF cheat sheet of all these sort of Montessori trips or tips, and some Montessori guidance on those grace and courtesy lessons, and just a few things that you could maybe present to them and talk about that. So some ideas to take forward.
Awesome. Oh, thank you so much. And are there any parting words or anything you want to leave us with today?
Just know it happens. And eventually, you know, they're going to have that relationship, and eventually you won't need to be continuously there. And it's really hard in the moment. But putting the work in now is really going to pay dividends in the future. So try not to take it personally, and know it happens. And know that it's really frustrating, but you'll get through it.
Awesome. Well, and where can everyone go to learn more?
Oh, you can find me on my website, The Kavanaugh Report. You can find me on Instagram at NickCav25.
Awesome. Oh, Nicole, it's been a pleasure. I always love chatting with you. Thank you so much for being here and for all the work that you're doing in the world to support parents and caregivers. I really appreciate you.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's been an honor.
Thank you. And for everyone watching, we'll see you again soon. Bye.